This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. I'm now joined by David Cobb, college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. You can find him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. David, how's it going, my friend?
Hey, Connor. I'm doing pretty well. It's going to be Christmas time. I don't know. I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay myself. It's one of those weeks where we don't have a Grizzlies game until Friday. The Tigers aren't playing during the week. It is certainly a slower week of sports in the city of Memphis, but we do have a lot of, you know, national storylines that we can dive into. And I think the biggest one happening right now, at least in college football, outside of the college football rankings and everybody yelling at everybody about that, is Bill Belichick. College football coach Bill Belichick seems to be happening. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. am I crazy here? I'm having a hard time reading the perception of Bill Belichick to North Carolina. Do people think that this is a good idea?
I don't think that people think it's a good idea. What is happening, and it's happening to me, is every time I've talked about this, there is a hesitation to criticize because it's Bill Belichick and because he is arguably the greatest coach we've ever seen in the NFL. And I think that some people are afraid to criticize the move of him to North Carolina because you expect that he might actually end up being able to win there. But overall, I think the idea of bringing in a 72-year-old to overhaul your entire athletic department, not just your football team, it's your entire athletic department, you're a blue blood in college basketball, and you're going to push football to the forefront for maybe a year of Bill Belichick, maybe 2 years of Bill Belichick, but the plan seems to be his son's going to take over whenever he jumps back to the NFL. Oh, and by the way, you just fired Mac Jones because you thought he was too old and didn't want to deal with NIL and the transfer portal. So your solution is bringing in a 72-year-old that's never worked in college sports? I don't know.
That's it. You just ran Mac Brown, a national title-winning college football coach, out of town, and now you're going to go get 72-year-old Bill Belichick. The knock on Mac Brown was that he was having a hard time convincing recruits that he was actually going to be there for the duration of their careers, right? Well, how is it going to be any different with 72-year-old Bill Belichick, who is very clearly attempting to do this so that he can get his son a cushy job, in a couple of years when he decides to hang it up? It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, all right, think about this. If LeBron James tomorrow said, I'm retiring from basketball and I'm going to go play tight end in the NFL, we would all say, okay, that would have maybe made sense 15 years ago. You could have gone to the NFL and played tight end and been amazing at it. But it's like, you can't do that now. And that's kind of where I'm at with Bill Belichick. It's like, if 15 years ago, for whatever reason, he'd had a falling out with Tom Brady and had wanted to go coach in college football, you know, I'm sure he could have done it quite well. Look at Nick Saban. He transitioned away from the NFL and then had the best season of his career in college football afterwards. But the difference with Bill Belichick is he's 72. He's never worked in college football. And, look, Mac Brown had great quarterbacks at North Carolina. He elevated the level of talent at North Carolina, but still couldn't really break through and get them to the point where they were a real national contender or a real, like, consistent challenger to Clemson in the ACC. And so, man, I don't get this. And the fact that you're seeing multiple people, Connor, compare this to the 2017 Tennessee coaching search is, I think, a really bad sign. Of course, hey, look, if they end up with Belichick, then I guess they're, you know, that's like Tennessee ending up with Gruden, which never happened. But, yeah, I just, to me, the warning signs and the red flags are everywhere with this, and I don't think it's going to work out if he does indeed end up, you know, as the coach there.
Is one of the warning signs the 400-page organizational Bible he gave North Carolina, basically the rules for Bill Belichick if he was taking over this job?
I mean, I guess it shows you that he put some thought into it and that he actually has some advanced thinking and maybe some level of understanding of the dynamics of college football. But my gosh, this is such a different world and an evolving world, you know, and he's never worked in it in the first place. It's so different than the NFL. And I mean, it's impressive that he's got that amount of literature. But I don't know, man, there's almost something kind of sad about it, that somebody who's accomplished as much as Bill Belichick has accomplished feels like he needs to go and do this. I mean, dude, you won 6 Super Bowls. You're a easy Hall of Famer. You're one of the all-time great NFL coaches. What do you need to go and soil your legacy for, man? Like, you know, dude, go play Madden or something if you got to scratch the itch. Like, you know, it's like, I mean, there's always a part of me, right, that wonders, like, oh, man, you know what? It might be fun just to kind of go work at the Jonesboro Sun and cover high school football. You know, I might do that for like 2 weeks and then I'd be like, okay, this is boring. I want to get back to it. Right. And I feel like that's what Bill Belichick is trying to do. He's just trying to like scratch the itch. And it's like, dude, like go volunteer for like a high school team or something, man. Like, you know, you were around some college teams. I think, you know, this fall he was around his son's team or something. I don't know. He's kind of made some moonlight appearances in a volunteer role. And it's like, that should probably be enough for you at this point in your career. I don't think that you need to be out there trying to go run a college program into the ground. And I mean, I'm afraid that's what would happen. I'm afraid he'd get the keys at North Carolina and that he would run it into the ground. And then, you know, then everybody's worse coming out on the other side. North Carolina's worse. Bill Belichick is worse for it. So I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
It feels odd that it's North Carolina doing this too. Like if it was a different program within college football that I know was going to have, you know, the most assets, they were going to have the most money behind them, then maybe it would make sense. But what worries me is that from his appearance on the Pat McAfee show, I'm just not sure if Bill Belichick is heading into this job with the correct mindset for college athletics. Because basically his pitch is, we are going to turn UNC football into an NFL pipeline. We are going to turn it into a pro-style, you know, organization. That's what he wants it to be. He wants to run it like he ran the Patriots. And if you're giving that pitch to recruits, I'm not sure that's what kids want to hear anymore. I'm not sure making it to the NFL, maximizing your talent, is at the top of their priority list for these kids now. I think that it is NIL and how much money can you make me? And it seems like that Bill Belichick just doesn't have that as a priority in his 400-page Bible that he gave UNC, when in reality, to be a head coach in college football now, that has to be number one. What are you doing with NIL? What are you doing with the transfer portal? What are you doing bringing kids in? And I just don't know if Bill Belichick has the right mindset for UNC right now.
Yeah, I don't think that North Carolina is going to have the NIL resources to go out and compete for the guys who realistically have a chance to be drafted. I mean, that's the type of program that you can get 2 or 3 guys drafted in a good year, but you might go 2 or 3 years without getting anybody drafted. And it's not like high school guys are going to be lining up to go play for Bill Belichick. The idea that he would get the, you know, we always talk about the Saban discount, right? Like if you're getting offered the same amount by 5 different programs, you might actually take a little bit less to go play for Nick Saban because of his track record of getting you to the NFL. Is Bill Belichick going to walk into college football with that amount of street cred with high school age players who, you know, are they really going to view him in that light? I don't know. Is he going to get North Carolina a discount? I doubt it. He's I don't know. It just doesn't really make any sense. You look at the Super Bowl rings, and I get why the North Carolina people are trying to talk themselves into it, but for crying out loud, the guy's never coached college football.
Never coached college football, and he's 72 years old. And we all know that as people age, they change. That is definitely what people say about older people, is that they change as they age. So I don't understand it. And that's why it is difficult to talk about it, because it is Bill Belichick. It's the greatest NFL coach we've ever seen. The Patriots dynasty, the Tom Brady years, he was dominant. One of the best coaches we've ever seen. But It just doesn't make a ton of sense for North Carolina to bring him in at 72 years old and rehaul their entire athletic department. I do want to ask you this, because you cover college basketball and college football, and we've heard the sentiment from a few college basketball coaches and from a few college football coaches, in that it really does feel like that we are getting into a point in college athletics where football is by far the king. And does it tell you anything that North Carolina is willing to overhaul their athletic department to push football forward when they are a blue blood of college basketball?
Right, yeah. They've never cared about college football as much as they seem to in this moment. That is indicative of the times. I mean, it used to be that you could sort of, as a North Carolina or a Kansas or a Kentucky, just get by with being that blue blood in football, and ends would meet because the season ticket packages were so illustrious. But there's just such an opportunity now in football. There is so much money to be made in that space, and it's a real knock on your institution and on your athletic department if you're non-competitive, and you run the risk of getting left behind if you're non-competitive. So what lengths do you have to go to just to be competitive? And that's the question I think North Carolina finds itself in right now. It's like, we all want to criticize Mack Brown for the way it ended there, but let's not forget, I mean, he came in and inherited a terrible situation and led them to 6 straight bowl games and had great talent on the offensive side of the ball, produced NFL draft picks at quarterback and Drake May and Sam Howell. And Mack Brown, by the historical standards of the North Carolina football program, did a really good job. And so if you whiff on this hire and then you go back to the days of going 2-10,
right,
or 3-9 with just some run-of-the-mill G5 coach who you pull up and make him a bottom half of the AAC or ACC paid type of coach, then what happens when the realignment wheels start spinning? Is your basketball program going to be enough to ensure that you don't get left behind? Yeah, probably at North Carolina, because there's you got a huge following, you've got an iconic basketball brand. But if your football program is sitting there and has gone 2-10, 1-11, 3-9, you know, how attractive are you to an SEC or to a Big Ten if that opportunity presented itself, or if the ACC collapsed in on itself and you had to go independent and strike a TV deal on your own or something? There's a lot of scenarios out there, a lot of uncertainty right now, that makes having a high-caliber football program really attractive. But I just don't think that hiring Bill Belichick is the way to get there. They should have had a better succession plan in place all along for Mack Brown. You had to know when you hired Mack Brown, it was going to be a 5-6-7-year thing at the most, right? They got some good years out of Mack Brown, but they didn't have a succession plan. And now they're in a really difficult situation here where they're just going to, apparently roll the dice on a really wild hire and Bill Belichick. And if it works out, great. But man, I think there's a chance that it really backfires for the reasons we've talked about. And then also this, you just think about all the support staff, all the analysts and the quality control guys and the assistant recruiting directors. I mean, it takes an army of well over 100 people to run a high caliber Power 4 football program. I understand Bill Belichick has connections all across the industry, right? But these are all NFL minds, right? And I get it. There's something to running your organization like an NFL organization. But at the end of the day, it's not. You have to have grassroots high school recruiting connections all over the country. Does Bill Belichick and his network of coaches have guys that he knows and trusts that have those connections in the high school ranks all around the country? That's a legitimate question to me, and I don't know if the answer to that is yes. And so, sure, you can recruit out of the portal, and his name will get some guys in there, but I don't know that you can build a successful, sustainable program with a 72-year-old former NFL head coach. I don't care who it is, what his name is. And then, say this, too. A lot of his success came with Tom Brady. Well,
right.
Mack Brown, as I mentioned, he had Sam Howell. He had Drake May. What did that get UNC? It got him to 9 wins once. Even if you do get the generational QB in there, the Tom Brady of college football, I don't think it guarantees you any success above and beyond what they've had in the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Well, because on one hand, I expect Bill Belichick to have some success at North Carolina if he takes that job because of the, coaching pedigree that he has. And historically, North Carolina has a pretty good roster. They're in a conference that isn't a world-beating conference, so they should have some success. But to your point, what does the future look like for North Carolina? What happens after Bill Belichick? Is Stephen Belichick going to be the coach of your future? I don't think it should be. It just seems like that if you hire Bill Belichick right now, that's the plan that you're signing up for. You are signing up to make sure that Steven Belichick and the Belichicks are your coaches of the future. And that just seems like a really risky endeavor if you're North Carolina to take right now. I don't understand it, especially after Mac Brown. It seems like you want to move forward with these younger coaches. I mean, some of the names that have emerged in the coaching search make a lot more sense for them than Bill Belichick. Steve Wilkes makes sense. John Sumrall makes sense. Mm-hmm. Georgia defensive coordinator Glenn Schumann makes a ton of sense. I just don't understand why they're trying to make such a big splash with Bill Belichick when it's not just about bringing in an older coach who has never coached in college football. The thing that I keep getting hung up on is how he wants to restructure the entire football program, how he wants to restructure the entire athletic department. And based on his comments on the Pat McAfee show, based on his comments, you know, that people have said from the manifesto that he gave, the 400-page manifesto, I think that he believes that if you just have a GM in college athletics, they're going to take care of all the recruiting stuff for you, when in reality, that's not how that works.
No, and you got to be active as a fundraiser. Like, if North Carolina hires Bill Belichick, they're going to expect him to be front-facing, and that's the thing that you have to do as a college football coach that you don't have to do in the NFL. You don't have to be a marketer in the NFL. You don't have to be friendly with the media because, well, if you're friendly with the 24/7 guys, they'll put in a good word for you with the high school coach of the five-star kid that you're recruiting. There's all these games and sort of PR stunts that you have to pull as a college football coach that you don't have to worry about in the NFL. And let's not kid ourselves, Bill Belichick is the absolute last person in the world who wants to deal with all that.
Right.
He is the most just non-social sort of coach out there, right? And so the idea that a GM is just going to handle all that for you, I think it shows you sort of how detached he is from the reality of what it is to coach in college football, man. It's like, I don't get it. It's like, you know, is the University of Memphis, are they going to look to hire Hubie Brown, like when the Penny Hardaway era ends? I mean, like, what? You know what I mean? Like what? I get it. You accomplished a lot in your career, but don't do this to your legacy, man.
That's a different game.
I feel like somebody needs to protect Bill Belichick from himself here and say, don't go and do this, man. Like you are one of the greatest of all time. And look, even if he goes and goes 3-20 in two seasons at North Carolina, he'll still be Bill Belichick. Nobody's taking his 6 Super Bowl rings, but there will always be that. Well, you remember when he went to North Carolina? It's like Michael Jordan coming back and playing for the Wizards. You know?
Yeah,
like,
we just don't talk about it. We act like it didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Like, well, that was unnecessary.
Yeah.
You didn't have to do that. And so I don't know. I just think it's a bad idea for everybody involved.
Yeah, it's like with Michael Jordan in the 90s, those 2 years he took off. I just say he was filming Space Jam. He had something very important to do. It had nothing to do with him going to play baseball. He had to film Space Jam, and that's how we talk about that. You know, we just completely ignore that era of the Michael Jordan legacy. But now it's very odd, and I do want to ask you, why do you think it's been so difficult for Bill Belichick to find a job at this point? Like, when he left the Patriots, I thought he was just going to walk right into an NFL head coaching job, and it just seems like there hasn't been a fit for him anywhere. It's very odd to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's got to be age, and you can you know that's not necessarily fair. I mean, I've pointed out his age a number of times already in this discussion, and it's part of it, right? I mean, it's just part of it. Father time comes for everybody, whether you're a player, whether you're a coach, whether you're a businessman, whether you're a writer, a radio host, you know, whatever it is, father time always comes for you. And I think that's part of it with Bill Belichick. He had diminishing success in the post-Tom Brady era in New England. He's also somebody who's accustomed to having a large amount of organizational control.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're an owner and you're a GM in an NFL franchise, are you willing to turn over the entire keys of your franchise to somebody who's over 70 years old, who in their last 2 active seasons didn't make the playoffs? I think that's what it comes down to. And the idea of somebody having a late career rebirth or reboot, that's not inconceivable. But I think that the sort of power and respect that Bill Belichick would command as the leader of any organization is almost intimidating to a hiring manager, to an athletic director, to an NFL franchise ownership group. You know, the idea of just giving the thing over to Bill Belichick without Tom Brady there next to him is, I think that's a little fearful. And I get it. You know, he's one of the all-time greats, but is he still an all-time great? Could you put him in charge of an NFL franchise tomorrow and reasonably expect to win a Super Bowl. I think that's what it comes down to. I think people who ask themselves that question kind of end up coming to the answer of no. You know, I don't really believe that he has that in him.
Now, I will say, if Bill Belichick ends up taking this job and it is finalized that he's going to be at North Carolina, I need there to be cameras in every single film session that they do, because we have already heard stories of how he behaved with Hall of Famers like Tom Brady in a film session where Brady would have a 4-touchdown game, basically no mistakes, and Bill Belichick would still find ways to rip his head off. So I'm sure it's going to go great with a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds that are being paid an obscene amount of money. There's going to be no issue there whatsoever with Bill Belichick.
I know, right? Yeah, right, exactly. You know, the only thing that I was just thinking about it, you talk about there being cameras anywhere, everywhere, you know, with like a coach and behind the scenes and all that. The only thing that can make this North Carolina coaching search more interesting would be if Deion Sanders somehow got involved. I think that's what we need. We need a Coach Prime's name to be bandied about in the UNC coaching search, and then it would officially take the cake from Tennessee in 2017 for craziest coaching search of all time.
Now, you know, you say that jokingly, but I'm going to be honest. I think Deion would be a great hire for North Carolina, you know, because he understands the game of college athletics. He plays the game as you are supposed to. He understands that NIL and having a big platform is the number one thing. It's not about just having a pro-style system, a pro-style organization, and playing football the right way. Unfortunately, that is not the number one priority for a lot of these kids. It is, what can you do for me in my pocket, and can you get me to the NFL at the same time? And Belichick might be able to get you to the NFL. I'm just not sure he really gives a damn about these kids' pockets. And that's the big difference to me. It's Bill Belichick, a great football coach. If this was just about football, yeah, it would make a lot of sense. But the 400-page Bible that he gave them, the commitment that it's going to take from the athletic department, oh, and by the way, I'm only going to be here for a couple of years, and my son's going to take over from me, that's the succession plan? I don't know. Just feels pretty risky for me. But from one thing that is risky to one thing that isn't as risky, BYU got a massive, massive recruit signing this week. A.J. DeBonza is going to BYU. He is the first 5-star recruit to commit to BYU since ESPN recruiting database began in 2007. Does this signing tell you the landscape of college athletics is changing because of NIL?
Without a doubt. And the signs have been pointing this way for a while. But when you get a 5-star, number one generational talent committing to BYU, it's just the sort of ultimate validation of what we've been seeing in college basketball recruiting. Because if you flash back to the last cycle, two of the top three prospects committed to Rutgers, mm-hmm. right? And so this is a continuation of that. And it's also a validation of the hire BYU made when Mark Pope left. Oddly enough, I think both sides have actually won the breakup in terms of the, you know, Mark Pope leaving BYU to go to Kentucky.
Right.
Kentucky is a top 10 team right now that is playing at a really high level. And now BYU is attracting just insane levels of talent with a bright young head coach in Kevin Young, who, oh, by the way, he's got a lottery pick on the roster right now that he's doing an awesome job with in Igor Dimmitt. And so you see that as A.J. DeBonza, and you're like, okay, like that is somebody that I could go and play for. And then I'm a little surprised at the fact that BYU is able to be so competitive in the NIL space, or that they have the appetite to do it. But that's what it comes down to as well. Is like they're right up there with Kansas, right up there with Alabama. If you're a young person and you don't care about the history of college basketball, and you know it's like whatever, Allen Fieldhouse, who cares, right? Then why not go to BYU? And so I know it seems wild to most fans out there, but in this day and time, if you got the money to pull it off, like you can get a guy like that. And then when you got a coach there in Kevin Young, who's doing a really good job, who has that NBA background, I think it makes a lot of sense.
And it does sound like that NBA background was a big deal to AJ. He said that, you know, this is Kevin Young. He coached my favorite player in Kevin Durant, and he coached Devin Booker. And I think that with his game and how he plays, a lot of people have compared him to kind of being that big explosive wing that Kevin Durant was in college. So I think that was really appealing to him. But ultimately, the reason they were able to beat Alabama, North Carolina, and Kansas in this recruiting matchup was because of NIL. BYU's booster said, you know what, we want to get into the basketball scene, and we're going to make this Mormon money be heard.
Yeah, right. It's funny, too. He signed an NIL agreement with Red Bull. That's kind of a contradiction. I mean, I don't even think you're allowed to drink Red Bull.
It's caffeine. I think they're allowed to. Maybe no caffeine. I'm getting no from King George. I don't know. I've watched that. Did you watch that Secret Life of Mormon show with your wife that I had to watch with my wife? It was actually pretty good, but it's a wild, wild culture over there.
Yeah, Connor, I pretended like I wasn't watching, but I was kind of watching.
It was kind of electric, wasn't it? The end of that first episode was nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, all of a sudden, Salt Lake City has become a cultural fascination. it's AJ DeBonson, man. He's going to go out there. He's going to ball out. And then that program is going to continue to elevate. And now that they're in the Big 12, I mean, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. And they got the NIL money. And it just goes to show you, like, think about this. You see it all the time now. Guys are leaving Ivy League schools.
Yeah.
You know, what, 1% of our population, if that, is, you know, could qualify for admission to an Ivy League school. And guys are now leaving Ivy League schools because the NIL money is so great that they'll transfer from a Yale or a Harvard. But think about, what if, like, Yale or Harvard got their wealthy alums to actually pool together and make an NIL fund? I mean, you know, some of the wealthiest people in our nation graduated from those colleges. And right now, as of 2024, they all kind of turn their noses up at NIL. But man, like, think about it. Like, if they actually decided that they cared, like, if you could pair the elite academic experience, like, of an Ivy League school with the NIL resources, like, you could get, I don't know, you could kind of become like what Stanford was, like, at the height of the Jim Harbaugh era in football, you know? It's just interesting when you see a BYU pop up on the radar like this, because it makes you think about the possibilities of schools that you never really considered before, you know, now being major players on the national stage. And then it's cool because it levels out the talent a little bit. You don't get all the top guys just going to Kentucky, just going to North Carolina, just going to Kansas. They're all spread out. And that's what I love about college basketball this season, man. The amount of talent. The freshman class is awesome. It's one of the best freshman classes we've had in a long time. And, like, yes, there a lot of those guys are at Duke and Cooper Flagg, and of course, but they're also spread out, you know, far and wide at Rutgers, at Arizona State, at places that you wouldn't necessarily always expect. And I mean, I think that's good. I think it makes college sports more interesting when there's more players on the national stage like that. So I think this is a good thing for college sports.
That's exactly where I was going to go next, was ask you about the parity that we have seen in college athletics in the last year. We're also seeing it in college football. Look at the college football playoff right now. There was a huge argument that teams like Alabama and Miami were getting left out because, well, they have the most talented roster, where it's like, well, the parity across college athletics this year has been great. I mean, in college basketball, I feel like every single night I'm turning it on to watch, there is an upset somewhere. There is some type of big upset left and right now. I do want to ask you, though, even though we are enjoying the parody, and I think it makes for a better television product, a better product overall, do you think that we are going to hit an eventual point where the blue bloods in college basketball and college football get fed up with it, and they are going to call for some more restrictions around NIL? Because it does feel like right now we are living in the wild, wild west, and I just don't know if it's sustainable.
Yeah, so when the House settlement goes final here in a few months in the spring, you know, the delineation will start to become a lot more clear, because it's not going to be like begging your donors for money every year like it is now. It's then going to become largely about the revenue sharing piece, and the biggest athletic departments, the ones who make the most money, are going to be a tier above in what they can pay. And so, yeah, there will be a sort of natural separation there. But I almost think of it from a standpoint of like kind of choosing what you want to be good at. And, you know, is there a program out there? I don't want to pigeonhole any one school into being like a one sport school, but take UConn, for example, right? They're independent in football. They don't have to invest all that much in their football roster. And then they can take all that money they make from the Big East and from basketball ticket, you know, shoot, they can even take their football season ticket sales and apply that money to the revenue sharing that's going to go to pay their basketball program. So I think that's what it's going to become. I think you're going to see athletic departments and ADs kind of have to pick and choose a little bit more, like what they really want to prioritize and what they want to be good at. And your absolute wealthiest, your top 10 or 12, they'll be able to do both. Like, they'll be able to field a national title caliber football and basketball team. But your Syracuses of the world, mm-hmm. who are probably in the 30s or the 40s, like, they're going to have hard decisions to make. Like, Are we cool with just being middle of the pack in both? Or do we want to push our chips in on basketball, which is our legacy, and really try to stock up on the basketball talent side? Like that, those are the decisions that are coming. And they're going to be difficult decisions, and they're going to have, you know, widespread impact. And, you know, there's going to be some certain coaches on campuses that I think that are going to get their feelings hurt pretty soon here, because it's not going to be as much about you going out and raising the money yourself with your specific donors as it will be about your department as a whole deciding for you, you know, kind of how much money you're going to get.
David, this was fantastic. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
That was David Cobb, college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. You can find him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. When we come back, we get to dive into the Blitz. You're listening to Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn on 929 FM ESPN. Stick around. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. Every single day on the Gabe Kuhn Show, we do the Blitz. Got to do it right now. And as always, the Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. George, what you got for me?
Per friend of the show, DeMichael Cole, the Memphis Grizzlies are hoping to get Zach Edey back, quote, soon, according to coach Taylor Jenkins.
I think he's going to get some more contact in the next couple of days, maybe a play group on Friday. Play groups are back, and then we'll evaluate towards the end of the week, Jenkins said. This is all from our good friend DeMichael Cole. Edey has been sidelined with a sprained ankle since November 17th. When he suffered the injury against the Denver Nuggets, there was hope that he'd be back this past weekend against the Boston Celtics or the Washington Wizards. But after practice last Wednesday with the Memphis Hustle, Jenkins said the Grizzlies weren't comfortable with bringing Edey back so soon. Now, I think part of that is that the Memphis Grizzlies have been absolutely rolling since he got injured on November 17th. The Grizzlies went 9-1 in 10 games without Zach Edey. Brandon Clark has really showed up. He's had a huge role for this team. I want to see Zach Edey back soon, though. You got the Brooklyn Nets coming up. You're at L.A., Golden State, at Atlanta, Clippers, Raptors. That is your next few games coming up for the Memphis Grizzlies. And I do think that Zach Edey could be a big help for this team in those games. I also just want him to get in the groove of this team as they are seemingly healthier than they have been in a few seasons. I want that chemistry with Ja Morant to continue to build. I want to see what it looks like with Zach Edey coming off of the bench and Brandon Clark starting, because it does seem like that is going to be what that roster sits as for a while, and probably should, because we just talked to Drew Hill about it. Brandon Clark has been so effective for this basketball team in the starting lineup. He has been so effective when he's been paired with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Ja Morant. I want to see Zach Edey back soon, though. I think that he was really productive, and he was getting better every single game before he got injured. I understand that we had some high highs, but we didn't really have any low lows with Zach Edey. He looked comfortable on the basketball court. There were a few moments where he would get beat defensively, but a rookie is going to do that. He needs to continue to work on his hands and catch those unexpected passes from Ja Morant. But ultimately, I hope to see Zach Edey back soon, and it seems like we got some good news. Play groups are back for the Memphis Grizzlies, and Zach Edey is in one of them.
Oh, this one's a doozy. New from On3 Sports. Ohio State Representative Josh Williams has introduced the OHIO Sportsmanship Act on Tuesday. This act would make it a felony offense.
A felony.
To plant a flag at the center of Ohio Stadium.
What are we doing? What are we doing? I'm going to be honest. I love the flag planting after a big rivalry game. I love it. If you don't want a flag planted in the middle of your field, win the football game. Win the football game. There is something called sports hate. And when it is healthy, I think it can be good. It makes sports better. It makes it more enjoyable. Ohio State, Michigan hating each other is one of the reasons that rivalry is so good. I'm sorry, Ohio State. Beat a bad Michigan team. I don't want to hear your whining and moaning about getting a flag planted in the middle of your field when you lost to a bad Michigan team. That's on you. Also, pepper spray.
Come on.
Really?
Come on.
Really? Pepper spraying college kids because they're getting in a fight on a football field? Do we really need to do that? Grow up, Ohio State. Grow
absolutely
up.
Absolutely no need for it. I think this is all just posturing for no reason. Also, I'm sorry. Is there nothing better you can be doing with your time? You're a state representative. Get
yes.
it together. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, the election's over. You're not trying to win votes right now. It's absolutely insane. There was this whole discussion about, is flag planting good for college athletics? Is it good for college sports? I think so, yes. I want the competitive nature back. I understand some people being like, why are you so upset with flag planting even though these kids are leaving every single year and that's the only time it seems they have program pride? Good. I don't mind it. I don't mind sports hate in college sports. I don't mind sports hate in professional sports. It's good. It makes rivalry games better. It is why we care about them. And if one of the rewards for winning a football game is you get to plant your flag, great. Awesome. It's going to make the players give a damn about that game every single season. Ego matters.
A little bit goes a long way.
It matters.
Trying to take away one of the best things about college sports at times is, you know what? That's un-American. This act is un-American.
Communist, some would say. Is this a communist ideal, taking away flag planting? What are we doing? It's college athletics. Who cares? It's a flag. A felony for planting a flag in the ground? Was pepper spray not enough, Ohio State? You had to go and make it a felony? Grow up. Grow up, Ohio State. That's going to be it for the Blitz today. When we come back, we got to wrap up the show with small talk. You're listening to Connor Dunning on 929 FM, ESPN. Stick around. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. Well, I had David Cobb on. We were talking about Bill Belichick. We got some numbers that came out for his contract with North Carolina. Bill Belichick is going to be the new head coach for UNC, and they are going to pay him 3 years, $30 million. George, is Bill Belichick worth $10 million a year in college football?
Well, if we go back to what I said yesterday, probably not.
Probably not.
I certainly don't think so. And to me, that term of that deal as well is probably not super tenable or helpful when it comes to college athletics.
I think that Bill Belichick is the best coach we have ever seen in the NFL. I believe in his coaching ability. I do think that he is going to have some success at North Carolina because he is Bill Belichick. I don't think it's going to be some massive disaster that some are expecting it to be. That being said, you just fired Mack Brown because you were worried about an older coach in the era of NIL, in the era of transfer portal. So your solution was to bring in 72-year-old Bill Belichick, who has never coached in college athletics before, had a 400-page manifesto, a.k.a. Bible, for how he wants your program to run. Seems like you're giving a lot of power to Bill Belichick in an area that he has never had to be in before. Again, I believe in him as a coach. What makes me worried is everything else that you have to do as a coach in college football right now. Nick Saban said it's too much for him. We've seen a ton of legendary coaches, whether it's college basketball or college football, say no thank you the last few years to coaching because of the wild, wild west that is NIL. They're going to have a GM, and that's certainly going to help. But ultimately, is this going to be worth it for North Carolina? We shall see. I know what I want. I want cameras in that room. I need a Hard Knocks version of North Carolina with Bill Belichick, because watching him rip the head off of a quarterback after they have a good game is going to be must-watch television, because he was doing it to Tom Brady during MVP seasons, the greatest quarterback we've ever seen. He was finding flaws in him. He's certainly going to do that with college players. It's going to be interesting to see. It's just exciting. It's really exciting news having Bill Belichick back in football. It's going to be something to keep an eye on for a very long time. Very long time. 3 years, $30 million for Bill Belichick. That's going to be it for the Gabe Kuhn Show today. I want to thank my guests, Drew Hill and David Cobb. We will be back same time, same place tomorrow, but with a surprise. New father, Gabe Kuhn himself, is going to make an appearance on the show tomorrow. We got to have a segment called What Has Gabe Missed? Got to get his takes on the college football playoff, the Grizzlies, the Tigers, Bill Belichick. We'll have a lot to talk about with him. We'll also have Jeff Calkins on, as always, on Thursdays. Thank you, as always, to the Honorable King George. For George, I'm Connor. Peace.